Good morning and welcome to WUF, West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. My name is Spencer Urban. I use the pronouns he and him, and I'm privileged to welcome you this morning. To begin, please turn off. We'd like to ask that you please turn off your Wi-Fi on your devices so we can have as much bandwidth as possible outgoing from here to our friends who are joining us virtually. Whoever and wherever you are, you're welcome here, regardless of your age, your abilities, the color of your skin, or your cultural heritage, where you were born, regardless of whom you love, or how, or if you identify your gender, whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none, we are glad that you've joined us. We are ever grateful to all of the early stewards of this land, beginning with the original peoples, the indigenous tribes, many of whom live among us today, and to whom our doors are always open. Please check the announcements in your order of service to see what's happening this week. And if this is your first time with us and you don't have an order of service but would like to connect, please contact our congregational administrator. Her contact information is on our website and on your screen. Following our service today, there will be a congregational meeting about our budget. Today's service is going to be a little different. This is an important season this year for the Abrahamic faiths. Ramadan began 8 days ago, and Easter is next week. So today, we'll be thinking about the Jewish celebration of Passover. So, today let's stand together as we are willing and able. As a community, as we light our chalice, which is a symbol of gathering for many peoples and cultures, and let us speak together our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. And let us open our hearts to love one another. I think we have a message now from our Director of Religious Education for our time for all ages.
The story of Passover. A long, long time ago, the Israelite people were enslaved in Egypt. In Hebrew, it is called Mitzrayim, which means a narrow place. But in order to understand how we got there, we have to go way, way back in time. Arami Oved Avi. A long, long time ago, there was a famine in the land of Israel. Nobody had anything to eat. To keep his family safe, Jacob moved them all to the only place they knew they had food, Mitzrayim, or Egypt. Joseph, Jacob's favorite son, was already there. He had become prime minister of Egypt, assisting a kind-hearted pharaoh, ensuring the people had enough to eat.
Over time and over many generations, Jacob's family grew. They soon became a great, mighty, and prosperous nation, and because of this, became a threat to a new pharaoh, one who did not know Jacob and Joseph and all the wonderful things they did for Egypt. Out of fear towards these Israelites, Pharaoh enslaved them. He made them do hard work in the hot desert sun, commanding them to bake bricks out of mud and straw to build cities like Pitom and Ramses. In their anguish, the Israelites cried out to Adonai, the God of their ancestors. God heard their voice and saw their suffering.
Moses, having fled from Egypt after defending the Hebrew slaves, was a shepherd in Midian. God called to him from the midst of a burning bush. God directed Moses to go to Pharaoh and tell him, "Let my people go." Pharaoh was not eager to free his slaves. When Moses came to talk to Pharaoh, Pharaoh said, "No." To convince them to free the Israelites, God brought 10 plagues to afflict Pharaoh and his people.
Dam, blood.
Tzvardea, frogs.
Kinim, lice.
Arov, swarms of beasts.
Dever, cattle disease.
Shrin, boils.
Barad, hail.
Arbe, locusts.
Hoshech, darkness.
With each plague, Pharaoh grew more and more stubborn. Every time Moses asked Pharaoh to let the people go, Pharaoh said, no. After the ninth plague, the plague of darkness, the Israelites were told to prepare for what was to come. Every family was to take a lamb and make a special sacrifice to God. Then they put the blood of the lamb on the doorposts of their homes as a sign that Israelite slaves lived in those homes. The tenth plague was Makat Bechorot, striking down the firstborn sons of Mitzrayim. The Israelites were spared because of the blood on their homes. The angel of death passed over. Pasach, the marked houses.
After this tenth plague, the grieving Pharaoh relented and agreed to let the Israelites go. They were in a hurry, and they knew Pharaoh could change his mind at any moment. They did not even wait long enough for their bread dough to rise. They quickly gathered their food and their belongings and left Mitzrayim as fast as they could. Sure enough, Pharaoh did change his mind. His army chased the Israelites into the sea, and just as the last Israelite stepped out onto dry land, the waves of the sea crashed down on Pharaoh and all of his men. The Israelites were saved. They rejoiced with singing and dancing, even as God grieved the loss of the life of the Egyptians, who were also God's children.
We remember these events today with the holiday of Passover, beginning with the Seder, a special meal that includes elements such as drinking four cups of wine, asking four questions, reading about and discussing the story of the Exodus from a book called the Haggadah, eating foods filled with meaning like unleavened bread called matzah and bitter herbs called maror, and through it all, trying to imagine what it would have been like to be a slave to Pharaoh in Egypt.
We continue to tell this story each year at our Passover Seder because we know that if God had not freed us, we would all still be slaves. We recognize that the more we learn and talk about it, the more we can see the suffering of others and feel called to make sure that all enslaved people are freed, even today.
Good morning, everyone. I'm honored to be here. Thank you. Today, we are 5 days away from the most significant holiday of the Jewish people. The Passover story, told in the first 15 chapters of the book of Exodus, begins the story of a patriarchal society transformed into a people under the leadership of Moses. Later in the book of Exodus, after the ancient Hebrews have achieved freedom and therefore can make decisions for themselves, they entered into an agreement or covenant with God. This covenant, of which the Ten Commandments are the most well-known, is the basis for Judaism. We learn early in the story that the ancient Hebrews were slaves for more than 400 years before the Exodus. Why was this? Truly, we don't know. The ancient text does not tell us why. Perhaps they were complacent. Perhaps their fear was too great. What we do know is that they were inspired by a leader, Moses. We also know that it took courage on the part of the ancient Hebrews and of Moses to flee Egypt for the unknown, to face setbacks in the desert, and to commit to a covenantal community. These changes required courage. We know from our own lives that change is difficult. When we realize that the familiar is no longer satisfactory or can no longer be tolerated, we are willing to consider the unknown, no matter what the risk. Sometimes change is forced upon us. However, whatever the cause, the time for courage is when change is required. The Exodus story is one of significant risk, of heroes, of setbacks, and finally of commitment, all of it requiring the courage to change. My interpretation of the Exodus story comes by way of humanistic Judaism. Our movement is almost 60 years old, and as Spencer mentioned, was begun by Rabbi Sherwin Wein in Detroit, Michigan. Our Jewish practices are based on a humanistic and non-theistic approach to traditional Jewish holidays and life cycle events. We create new liturgy based on the ethical core of Jewish history, literature, and culture. Our institutes in Chicago and Israel train humanistic Jewish ritual leaders and rabbis. Humanistic Jews use ideas from science, modern theories in history and sociology, literature, language studies, and humanistic philosophy to understand and interpret the biblical text. Jews have been interpreting the biblical text for over 2,000 years and continue to do so. As a secular humanist, I don't necessarily find the literal text inspirational. However, when I read it humanistically, I can sometimes find great meaning. The Bible was written and edited by multiple people over a 1,000-year period. There are myths, legends, and some truly awful tales. There is also poetry, stories of love, and ethical sayings. There are multiple contradictory stories and conflicting points of view. The Bible is historical literature. It is not historical fact. For example, modern scholars no longer view the Exodus story as told in the Bible as true. It does not stand up to the rigor of modern historical analysis. And there's several reasons for this. First, the biblical account does not match with known extra-biblical accounts of the history of the area. There is no period in Egyptian history that corresponds to the biblical story. There is also no textual confirmation relating to this large-scale exodus. Second, some scholars point to the lack of archaeological evidence. There is no evidence of a mass migration of people from Egypt to Canaan. Instead, there is some archaeological evidence showing the movement of Canaanites. There is also evidence of continuity of the Canaanites and the Israelites, leading to the proposal that the Israelites originated with the Canaanites. Still, other scholars propose that the story is influenced by one tribe, the Levites, who may have been Egyptian in origin. The biblical text notes that Moses was from the Levite tribe. Many Levite names are Egyptian in origin, including Moses and Aaron. The Levites were cultic experts, and they were a tribe without land. Perhaps the story came from them, and perhaps they brought it from Egypt. I was taught the Exodus story was true, and I was stunned and a bit angry when, as an adult, I learned the story was not true. It took me a while to accept this assertion, but I can tell you I eventually did. But now I had a new problem. What was I to think about the Exodus story and about the Bible itself? I had never believed the creation stories were fact. Okay, that was easy. However, what about the powerful and meaningful Exodus story? This was a harder transition. I came to realize that what was powerful and meaningful about the Exodus story was not the literal story. It was the many ideas embedded in that story: slavery, freedom, imperfect leadership, the risks and trials of freedom, and coming together in a covenantal relationship, all of this requiring courage. Now that I am no longer bound by the literal text, I can explore the literary text. Great literature inspires us. We learn with each new reading. The biblical text commands us to tell the story of the Exodus. And it's in the spirit of that command I invite you to join me in a telling of the Exodus story as a mythic tale of a people who journeyed from slavery, where they could make no decisions for themselves, to a people who chose to be in a covenantal community. Their journey falls into three parts: slavery and freedom, traveling in the desert, and commitment to the covenant. What did they face at each step, and how did they respond? What can we, as members of a covenantal community, learn from this story? The first part of their story begins at the end of Genesis, when Joseph, the son of the patriarch Jacob, is sold into slavery by his brothers. Joseph rises to prominence and wealth as an advisor to the Pharaoh. At the end of Genesis, Joseph is reunited with his fathers and brother. The first chapter of Exodus is a prologue describing the growth of Jacob's family into a people and the oppression they suffered under the new Pharaoh. The worst edict from the Pharaoh was the order to drown the newborn Hebrew boys. This is when we are introduced to Moses. He was saved when his mother placed him in a basket and he was discovered by an Egyptian princess. Moses was then nursed by his mother and then raised in Egyptian court. As an adult, Moses saw an overseer beating a slave. In his anger, he killed the overseer. Fearing punishment, he ran away to the land of Midian. There he married and worked as a shepherd for his father-in-law. When God approached Moses to lead the Hebrews to freedom, he declined. Moses was afraid to be a leader. He knew the Pharaohs and the Hebrews wouldn't listen to him, and he had a speech impediment. Moses told God, "I have never been a man of words, either in the times past or now. I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." Finally, God relented and said that his brother Aaron would join him and speak for him. Moses, his wife and family, and Aaron made the journey to Egypt, where they faced Pharaoh and demanded the release of the Hebrews. 10 times Moses demanded that Pharaoh let the Israelites go or suffer from God's anger. 10 times Pharaoh refused, and 10 times the Egyptians suffered the plagues from God's anger. Following the last plague, the Israelites had to make quick preparations for their departure. They finally crossed the sea to freedom and celebrated with singing and dancing, led by Miriam, Moses' sister. In this first part of the tale, we learn the courage the Israelites displayed when, despite their fears of the unknown, they trusted Moses, ran from the Egyptian soldiers, and crossed the sea. We also learn that Moses was an imperfect leader. He had a terrible temper, a speech impediment, and he didn't want to be a leader. Moses faced these imperfections with courage to stand up to Pharaoh and to lead the Israelites. We also learn something especially important about the beginning of what it meant to be a people. The commitment of the Israelites to each other and to Moses gave them the courage to proceed. So too in our communities. For example, when we first learned of COVID, we could only fear the unknown because we didn't have enough information to create a future. It was our commitment to each other and to our leaders which gave us the courage to make, and continues to give us the courage to make, changes in response to COVID. In the second part of our story, Moses and the Israelites traveled into the desert, where they faced new challenges. They suffered from a lack of water and food. They were attacked by raiders. Their need for water was met with their arrival at an oasis with 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. After a month and a half, they became very hungry and complained to Moses and Aaron. God supplied manna, and while we don't know what manna was, we do know it fed the Israelites for the 40 years they were in the desert. The last challenge they faced was an attack from a group of raiders called the Amalekites. There's no extra biblical record of the Amalekites, though they are mentioned in later stories in the Bible. Moses appointed Joshua to select some men to fight the Amalekites. He stationed himself at the top of the hill, and while his hands were held high, the Israelites prevailed. When his hands grew heavy and dropped, the Amalekites prevailed. Finally, two men brought Moses a stone to sit on, and they held his hands up until the battle was won. In this part of our story, the Israelites face thirst, hunger, and raiders. Our communities may face financial setbacks, disillusionment, or doubt. Like Moses, our leaders can become worn out and tired. Again, it is our commitment to our community and our leaders which gives us the courage to respond to setbacks. Our commitment is the foundation for the spiritual support we provide our community and its leaders. This spiritual support is necessary to meet the very real and changing needs of our communities. In the last part of our story, the Hebrews eventually reach Mount Sinai, or the Mountain of God. Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses, arrives at camp with Moses' wife and two sons. The next day, Jethro sees that from morning until evening, Moses is acting as a judge to settle the disputes that people bring to him. Jethro says to Moses, "The thing you are doing is not right. You will surely wear yourself out, and these people as well. For the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me. I will give you counsel." Jethro tells Moses to do two things. One is to make the various laws and practices public so the people don't have to come to him all the time for counsel. Second, Jethro instructs Moses to find trustworthy people, that is, those who are not susceptible to bribes, and make them chiefs or judges of the people. The chiefs are to decide the minor disputes and bring the major disputes to Moses. Jethro tells Moses, "Make it easier for yourself by letting them share the burden with you." Moses did this, and Jethro returned home. In the next part of our story, Moses meets with God at the top of Mount Sinai to learn the terms of the covenant. The Ten Commandments are the initial terms. The first five are duties to God, and the second five are duties to people. Both are of equal importance. Some of the Ten Commandments are codified in our justice system today. So, for example, numbers 6, 8, and 9 are: you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, personally or in court. Following the initial terms set by the Ten Commandments, the entire covenant is laid out in the next three chapters. There are religious laws, civil and criminal laws, and there are ethical laws. The covenant also identifies times for spiritual gatherings throughout the year. I want to note here that these laws do not provide practical information on how to follow them. They are not a well-organized or detailed set of rules. There are also discrepancies with similar laws listed in other parts of the Bible. Filling in the gaps or interpreting how to follow these laws engage Jewish leaders to this day. There are, however, some ethical laws that are particularly meaningful to us today. These are laws calling for the protection and care of the stranger, that is, resident aliens, and laws for widows, orphans, and the poor. These laws are: you shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in Egypt. You shall not ill-treat any widow or orphan. If you lend money to the poor among you, exact no interest from them. If you take a neighbor's garment, you must return it to him before the sun sets. It is his only clothing. It is the sole covering for his skin. In what else shall he sleep? These laws are mentioned multiple times throughout the law codes, and their adherence is demanded by the prophets. These laws are often grouped together because they identify people who are without family or social protection and are therefore vulnerable to exploitation. It is an unfortunate reality that we can see examples of these vulnerable people in our city and in our country and in the world at large. In this final part of our story, we see the ancient Israelites are now a formal community. They have agreed to a covenant that is a set of practices and values to guide their interactions. They have established a leadership structure to facilitate solving problems and making decisions. They have also established important times for spiritual gathering. Our communities have also agreed to covenantal practices and values. Our communities also have a leadership structure for solving problems and making decisions. We also identify our important and meaningful times to gather. I invited you to join me in a telling of the Exodus story as a mythic tale of a people who journeyed from slavery, where they could make no decisions for themselves, to a people who chose to be in a covenantal community. Through this story, we saw that it took courage for the ancient Israelites to take risks, to overcome setbacks, and to commit to a covenantal community. Mythic stories are meant to inspire us. Our communal stories may not be as grand as a mythic tale. However, they are meaningful to us. Our communities have faced the unknown, taken risks, and overcome setbacks. We've not done this alone. We've relied on each other. It takes courage to commit to and maintain a covenantal community. Our principles and values are inspirational. They are what we strive for, and we need each other to reach them. It takes courage to recognize our weaknesses and acknowledge setbacks. It takes courage to trust in each other to strive to reach our inspirational goals. In the biblical story, it was God who gave the community commandments and laws to govern their actions. Today, we write our own principles and values. It is a testament to our communities that we have the courage to accept our weaknesses and to strive for the greater good. The biblical language can sound awkward to our ears. And indeed, the ancient commandments and laws were written for a society that lived more than 3,000 years ago. However, if we read carefully, we can discern principles that are meaningful to us today. Telling the story of the ancient Israelites can be a reminder of the journey our own communities continue to take. It can be a reminder of our continued commitment to each other. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. I love thinking about this community. I joined WIF just a couple years ago. In this short time, I have come to appreciate and feel deep gratitude for all I have found here. Acceptance and belonging, learning and growth, friendship and community. I hope that everyone can find many gifts here. So, this is the time in our service when we pause to reflect on what we have received from our community, to consider what it is that we have given and what it is that we are grateful for. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. As our time together comes to a close, our final words are from Mary Falk from the Book of Blessings. Loving life in its mysterious source with all our heart and all our spirit, all our senses and strength, we take upon ourselves and into ourselves these promises: to care for the earth and those who live upon it, to pursue justice and peace, to love kindness and compassion. We will teach this to our children throughout the passage of the day, as we dwell in our houses, as we go on about our journeys, from the time we rise until we fall asleep. And may our actions be faithful to our words, that our children's children may live to know truth and kindness have embraced, peace and justice have kissed. Go in love, go in peace, until we meet again. Thank you.